Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast. This time out, locked in to stage number two of Steve Perry on Open Trailer Podcast. Hi there, I'm your host Andy Austin, and this time out we get into Steve's first foray with Mike Rowe. You know, in the first episode we learned a lot of Steve's story, and you know, when we do multi-episodes on a guest, the first one is really the building blocks. I mean, the show isn't straight chronological, but you know, we spent a lot of time building the story and what became the person that made you click when you saw the name to begin with. So Steve's known for mainly motorsports, and did you realize that it ranks as one of his worst decisions in life? I mean, yeah, a pretty big truth bomb. When you think of Steve, mainly motorsports is probably one of the top three things that you think of, but he considers it, and why he considers it, an awful choice. You got to hear that story. But back to the Mike Rowe thing. So SP2 Motorsports is the team that also brought Kyle Busch to the Oxford 250. And how immature was a 20-year-old Kyle Busch? Oh, you're going to want to hear that story as well. And of course, Kyle, most people in our main racing area know Kyle and Seth Holbrook's partnership and what they've meant to each other over the years. Well, it's funny. Seth and Kyle almost were never a combination, and you'll find out why in this episode. Steve, while he says he didn't discover Austin Theriault, certainly played a major, major role in putting him on the map. And we tell that story of the night at Spud Speedway, which in turn had everything to do with mainly motorsports. So it's weird how everything's tied together. I think you're going to enjoy it. Thank you so much for the support on Patreon. Remember, if you really enjoy what we're doing here and you can contribute, patreon.com/opentrailerpodcast. And if you can't contribute to Patreon, but you really enjoy this platform, this particular show, then just tell somebody. That really, really helps, whether you're sharing, you're screenshotting, you're, you know, you're leaving a 5-star review, too. And I know I'm putting the upsell in there. Only put 5 stars if you really think we earned it, but hopefully you do. Don't give us a 1-star review. Like I said in the last episode, giving us a 1-star review is like putting a ton of lead on the car that doesn't really need lead, and no car really does. So we don't need that. But anyway, thanks a lot for all the support. It's always greatly appreciated, and I hope you enjoyed this one. It's stage number two of Steve Perry on Open Trailer Podcast. When do you get hooked up with Mike Rowe? First time?
2004.
Yeah. Had you built a relationship with him?
Nope.
How does that introduction happen?
Funniest thing. So we met him at the Portland show. You know, I obviously knew who he was. Mm-hmm. Was an icon. Not to be confused with Bobby MacArthur icon. But he was, you know, obviously I'm with Scott Poulin.
Yeah.
Scott Poulin had been a sponsor of mine.
So just for those that aren't so inside school, and I just had to learn this one too, Danny Poulin, Scott Poulin?
Brothers.
Brothers. So the brother of your first driver is your sponsor, Scott Poulin.
He's my sponsor.
He's the other SP.
I had been working with him at the gravel pit. Mm-hmm. Says to me after 2003, I don't want to be a sponsor no more. I want to be a partner with you. I want you to run it. But we're going to do this. We're going to do it right. So we make a deal. He buys in half of what we have. He says, so we go and get a driver. We get Jared Roby. Okay? He's our driver. So.
Why him? Is this before he had the Craftsman truck experience?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, same time.
Okay.
It was same time. So he's got that going on. He's running some ASA races. So I think he had some things we could use. We had some things. You know what I mean? So it worked. So, so we make a deal to put Jared Roby in the car. So we go and we run some races. We go to the 250. We go to Unity. We go to do some things. Wasn't fun. I'm all about having fun.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun.
What wasn't fun about it?
Just, he didn't want to. Now, he's racing down south. So he's racing at beautiful facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Unity Raceway ain't a beautiful facility. Okay.
Right.
But there was 75 guys up there trying to qualify and win a $25,000 to win race.
Yeah.
That was the place to be at that day up in New England. He didn't want to be there, you know. The 250, you know. I mean,
do you think he was above it?
I mean,
I don't think he would today.
No, but I think at the time,
2003, yeah, him.
You know, like, we had the Stacker trailer. He had
Yeah.
So we're running with him. We're not having fun, you know. So we go to the 250. Now, mind you, 7 years in a row, we had qualified for the 250 as a Saturday night, basically Beechridge team. That's quite an honor.
Yeah,
you know. So we go to the 250.
With Jared.
With Jared.
Yeah.
We don't qualify. First time we had never qualified. So I'll never forget. We're up in the Toda home, right? Me and Scott up there eating a Pop-Tart. Right? Love it. I remember, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So eating a Pop-Tart. He looks at me.
Yeah.
Reaches down. Pulls a plug. I'm like, I agree. You know, the old adage, pulling the plug on this.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. So we're all done. We ain't racing no
mid-season.
More. Mid-season, right after 250. I'm done. Mm-hmm. Ain't fun. So we go to go back to work, and the car's sitting at Jared's shop. And, you know, we're not even talking. We're not even planning on going racing. You know, it's one of those. Eventually it'll get talked about. We'll pull his motor out. And we'll go our separate ways.
Yeah, you just needed a cool off period.
Yep. There's no fighting. There's no arguing. Yeah, yeah. There's no. No, it's no fun. So, the next week, I'm going to Groveton with Mike Lux. We take a ride. We go to Groveton, and we go up there, and I go up, and like I said, I know Mike Rowe. We've talked to him. We've raced a couple times that year, and you know, but I don't know him to really. Hey, how you doing? I don't walk up in his trailer. I don't, you know what I mean? Just like any, and I tell people, if they go to a race and they don't know where to go, and, you know, they don't want to be in the way, and I'm like, just go always stand at the back of somebody's car. Nobody's ever usually working under the back of their car. If they are, they're fueling it, or if they're working at the back, they got major problems, and you'll know it. So I go, Mike Lux goes up in the trailer because he's part owner of the car and all that, and I stand at the back of the car. I don't know these guys. I'm not part of their team. I'm just there with Mike Lux.
Yep.
So Mike Rowe comes over, and he says, what are you doing? I said, not much.
It's a good Mike Rowe impression, actually.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Where's your car? I saw it's home sitting on four flat tires. He said, well, why don't we get it, and we'll go to Halifax and race it next week. I said, what?
Yeah.
He says, no, get it. He says, I think that car's better than the one I got here. He says, we'll take your car to Halifax. I said, you serious?
Wow.
I says, he says, yeah. I said, all right, I'll let me talk to Scott Monday and I'll let you know. He says, well, get my number from Lux and call me. All right. So I go to work Monday. I said to Scott, I said, hey, I says, you want to go racing next week? Well, he's all done, right? He says, no, I ain't going racing. I said, no. You want to go racing next week? He said, with who? I said, do you want to go racing next week?
Plug that thing back in.
He goes, with who? I said, Mike Rowe. He said, Mike Rowe wants to drive our car. I said, I'm telling you. He goes, are you serious? I go, yeah. He goes, well, what are we going to do? We ain't got a motor. I said, well, Jared, we did all that work for Jared Holland. He was building a house.
Mm-hmm.
I said, he owes us for the material. I'll call up. We'll make a deal. We'll figure out the cash that he owes us and the motor, and we'll get it done. He goes, if you can get it done, I'm in. So I called Jared. I said, all right, here's the deal. You owe this for the, what do you want for the motor? And let's get this done. Mm-hmm. All right. So I called Mike. I said, all right. Yep, we're in. He said, all right, where's the car? I'm going to send Seth down and we'll get the car. He says, well, Seth will go through it and get it all ready for the week. So I said, all right. So I tell him where it is and go get it. So I call Scott. Scott says, all right, what do they need? And whatever they need, tell them to get it. So I tell him, whatever you think it needs. So, you know, it needed a rear end. It needed this. It needed that. So they got it ready. So in the meantime, this is where I invented shut-up money. because I had plans to go away with the weekend. I had a big weekend with Leanne planned, and you know, yeah, we were doing this and that. So, but no way, we're going to Halifax. Right? Yeah. I mean, I got a chance. Mike Rowe is going
to
drive our car.
You don't
car,
have to convince me.
Right?
Yeah. Well, you
I
got to
convince her.
Her. Yeah.
So I said, hey, I call her up. I said, I'm going to go to Halifax this weekend and go racing with Mike Rowe. She says, well, no, we got plans this weekend. We got a sitter, the kids. And mm-hmm. I said, yeah, but I got a chance. Mike Rowe, it's going to, can't we do that another weekend? She goes, no, we made plans. You know, this is what we're going to do. I said, yeah, but Mike Rowe.
But,
I said, and she's like, no. I said, listen, you know that new Gucci watch you want? She goes, yeah. I go, I'll get it for you if I can just go to Halifax. She goes, you get it for me before you leave? And I go, yep.
She, goes, she knows you.
Yep. So well. She goes, okay, as long as you got it before you leave, I'll go. So this is where, like me and Scott, this is where it all starts, right? And we love life. And so we head to Halifax, right? So we're going up. They've got the hall going. And
how much
going.
Was the watch, I got to ask?
It was like $1,200. But this is 2004.
Yeah, that's a nice watch.
You know what I mean? So she's got it. We're good. I've shut her up. We're
$1,200.
Yep, $1,200. Yeah. I shut her up, invented shut up money. So we're headed. We get almost to the main border. We're talking about something, and he says, oh, this, that. And I said, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, something gets brought up about a license. And he goes, yeah, you know, you got to make sure you got that. And he reaches, you don't have a license.
Mike Rowe?
No, Scott.
Scott, okay.
So we've driven all the way to Saco to Calais. He's got no license.
Oh.
So now he's worried we're not going to be able to get back in the States. So we turn around and drive all the way back to Saco to get his license to turn around and drive all the way back. And he's mad. He's like, I ain't going. We ain't going. Screw this. I go, listen, this is the stuff that's going to make people talk. That we got all the way to the border, turned around, went all the way back to Saco, and then turned around and came all the way back. Yeah. We got to go. So we did. So we go up during the race. We qualify. We get in. We're running better. We've never run up front, right? So we're running up front, right? So then we got no crew help. We got Seth Holbrook. We got some kids, a couple old guys, me and Scott. Now, we're used to not having to do anything. Nothing.
Right.
So now we have to do something because we don't have enough help. So we know how Mike Rowe can be. We've already seen it. We've heard it.
Yeah.
Now we're sick to our stomach that we're going to screw up. So we're going to put the gas in the car, right? So with a dump can. Then they radio in that Mike's helmet hose come off. So they got to make a change. And okay, Scott, you're going to fuel it by yourself. Steve, you got to take his window net down, and then you're going to have to hook his hose up, put a zip tie on it, and put the window net back up, all without going down a lap. So Scott says to me, he says, Jesus, I hope the motor blows or something. I hope we get wrecked. I just don't, before we pit.
You don't want to deal with
Mike. Yeah, we don't want to take a chance of screwing up. So we're willing to wreck the get the race car wrecked.
Yeah.
So we don't have to do anything. That's us.
That's
our entertaining, you know? So it doesn't happen. We pull it off flawlessly. We get out. We're running top five, right? So then they get a couple wrecks and cars come across each other. So the whole car looks like it's been in a demolition derby. Hmm. And the whole radiator is all closed in and it's overheating. So Mike radios in. He says, it's overheating. What do you want me to do? Same thing in the situation with Donnie Culprit, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the only motor we got. He's like, oh, it's 250. It's 260. I'm like, well, we might
pull it out.
We might as well pit. You know what I mean? We might as well just pack it. We can't blow it up. You know, no sense, whatever.
Yeah.
So he comes down the front stretch. He pulls to the bottom because he's going to go down the back stretch and just pull on the infield. Meantime, there's a wreck. So they throw the caution out. So we holler on the radio, stay out, stay out, stay out. He stays out. Caution comes out.
Car
we're able to bring him in, clean everything out of the way on the radiator, the bumper and everything. And he ends up finishing second to Johnny Clark. So our first race ever with Mike Rowe, the Halifax 250, we finish second. Bring a trophy home. We're hooked.
Yeah.
We run a few more races next year with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, the rest of the year. Then we decide to go full-time the following year with SP2. You know, we had already started SP2, but then the next year was when we were full-blown, you know, and that's when
Who came up with that name?
I did, because same initials.
I know, I get it. I just want to know who came up with the idea.
It was just something easy.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just, it's so right there.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what happens the next year?
So you know, the funny part was we hired a couple guys. Mike Lux had planned on going racing with Mike Rowe, and he made a deal with us that said, listen, you know, I'll give you this car. You know, you hire a guy, I'll help pay for another guy, you know, I'll mm-hmm. sponsor, you know, you guys just put Mike in the car. So we had two cars. We were, you know, some money was spent stupidly, not on my end because I didn't have the money to spend, but, you know, Scott wanted to, you know, the tractor trailer and always take two cars to the track, and we were doing all the, you know, mm. you know, the high rolling stuff, trying to keep up with Estes and Benji and all that. So, and we were the team to beat. You know what I mean? We really were. Mike won six or seven races that year, the 250 and all that.
What was it like to do that, go through that experience, the 250?
You know, the funny part was being a local Saturday night guy from Beechridge, you know what I mean, and winning races there and people knowing who you were, but then stepping out at that level and then, you know, with Mike Rowe, you know, it's a whole different level.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it, you know, going to the 250, he attracts a crowd just being himself, you know what I mean? And it doesn't matter if he's running 5th or 25th, he attracts a crowd.
Yeah.
You know, and then, so, you know, we had good people around us. We were having a ball. I mean, winning races, you know, you're having fun. But then, you know, I like to bring that atmosphere of, you know, a little bit of the extracurricular stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of the, just the over-the-top fun. And we did. We really enjoyed it. You know, I had good people around, you know, incorporated my friends that had raced the Saturday night program with me, the Pervs, the, you know, Spanky, you know, some of those guys with Mike's guys from, you know, Seth and, you know, Seth's family and just had a ball, you know. Yeah. And then when you get the opportunity to bring a Kyle Busch into the fold and run the 250 and, you know, get that around you, and it just, you know. Yeah,
you know, it's funny. We spent a lot of time talking about, you know, not say little things, but the more minute details of some of your racing career. But then when we talk about the Oxford 250 and Kyle Busch, you just kind of throw it out like, yeah, you know, that happened. I mean, bringing Kyle Busch to the Oxford 250 and having him as a teammate. And really, I think to this day, if you ask Kyle Busch what his experience with Mike Rowe is like, he will have a very specific answer because it stayed with him. You know, I think he was able to make Mike made a very big impact on Kyle on that day. But can you tell us about that experience?
So it was funny because we had built two cars, you know, one to have a backup.
Mm-hmm.
But my wholeheartedly intention was to put a cup driver in the car. You know, I wanted that little extra flamboyancy surrounding us going to the 250.
Mm-hmm.
So I had approached Bill Ryan and said, listen, if you get the opportunity and there's somebody, you know, give me a call if you need a seat, you know. So he called me up and he said, listen, Kurt can't come back, you know, this year, but his brother Kyle would like to come back. So if you're interested, Kyle Busch is looking for a ride and for the 250.
And financially, how does that work out when you know, back in the day when the Trevor Baines and the Denny Hamlins would come to the 250 and a Kyle Busch, how does that work financially?
So everybody's deal's different, you know? Mm. So you negotiate, you know, with the track, you know, with Bill, you know, and so we had a great deal with Bill. My deal with Bill was a drum of fuel for each car, 20 pit passes for each car, and six or seven sets of tires for each car. So my day was paid for.
Yeah.
And then go sell sponsorships. You know what I mean?
So I guess the other question out of that would be, cup drivers who showed up at the 250 got paid an appearance fee. So you would negotiate, but the appearance fee was with the track.
That was on the track. So
the track would bring them in, and then they would just find a ride, and that ride would be either...
Well, the track would find them the ride.
Yeah, so whether that was you, or that was Scott King, or Worf, I think.
Yep, Worf, yeah. With Kenseth and all that. Yeah. So it was funny. So he calls me up, and, you know, like I said, I negotiate the deal, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm all excited. I call Scott up. I go, hey, we had a cup driver. So I go back in the shop, and I say to Seth, who's working under the car, I said, hey, we got us a cup driver. He says, who do we got? I said, Kyle Busch. He gets up, well, you better find somebody else to work on these cars. I go, what? He goes, yeah, you better find somebody else to work on these cars. I go, why is that? He goes, I ain't working on it. All he does is tear up. I ain't working on his stuff. I said, well, you are working on his stuff because you're employed by us, and he's our cup driver, and that's the end of it. Well, if I listened to Seth Holbrook that day and say, okay, Seth, I'll call Bill right now and tell him to send him somewhere else. Do you know how different Seth Holbrook's life would be right now?
I was letting you tell the story.
You know what I mean?
And because, for those that don't know, just expand on how Seth and Kyle have ended up working together in the ensuing years.
Yeah, so Seth, you know, he didn't crew chief Kyle's deal at the 250. He crew chiefed Mike's, but he oversaw Kyle's deal. And then, you know, the testing with Kyle and then the friendship. And then Kyle flew him all over the country to help him with his own super late model program and a lot of other things.
And build Kyle Busch Motorsports.
Built Kyle Busch Motorsports. And the reason Kyle Busch Motorsports shut down the super late model program a couple years ago is because Seth Holbrook didn't want to be the crew chief of it anymore. So Seth Holbrook got a lot of opportunities and doors open for him because of the relationship with Kyle Busch. So it's so funny. And I remind Seth of this all the time.
Of course you do.
That because of me not listening to him, you know, how many opportunities he got, you know, and the doors that opened. And good for Seth, because one of the hardest working guys, you know, I've ever met in this sport, you know.
Yeah. So what kind of Kyle Busch did you run into in 2005? Or was it 06?
Hard worker. Yeah. I mean, you know, he wants to win races. And how can you not like a driver that wants to win races, you know?
Well, I mean, he was kicked out of Hendrick, you know, for his attitude.
Yeah.
So I guess the sideshow, did you deal with any of the sideshow of Kyle Busch?
I mean, so he comes up, we test in 05, right? And then, you know, he should have won the race. Mike won it. Kyle should have won it, you know, no doubt. So 2006, Kurt's getting married the week of the 250. So they basically say, you know, Kyle's not coming because Kurt's getting married that week. He can't come up and test, you know, all this. So Bill calls me, says, hey, J.J. Ailey's coming. What do you think about putting him as Mike's teammate? I said, no, good. We're all set. You know, we got to have something better than that.
And JJ was driving for JGR at that point, wasn't he?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
He took Bobby Labonte's ride.
Yep. So he ended up going with Wolf. So he calls me again. He goes, what do you think about Ricky Craven? From a business standpoint, it probably would have been the best move, because VIP came with Ricky Craven, brought money, you know. And I said, nope, I'm good. I said, Bill, the reason I want a driver is to give me two legitimate chances to win this race, okay? Not for the novelty factor.
Yeah.
I said, if you want Kyle, let's see if we can make it happen. I said, here's my thoughts. Loudon's 2 weeks before. Let's see if we can get him to stay overnight, come up and test Monday, because testing is very important to him. Test on Monday. Then we have 2 weeks to get the car prepared. Then he can come up Sunday, the day of the race. At least he's already had his chance to test. Bill says, all right, if you can pull it off, let me know, and I'll make my end happen. So we call Kyle, and we run it by him, and he says, yeah, that works for me. And so funny. So he runs Loudon. He wins. Now, what does that mean? Does he have to go back to Charlotte? Does he have to do this, that?
Right.
No, he showed up Monday at 11 o'clock like he was supposed to. We want to talk about Loudon, you know, all this, all that.
Nope.
Could care less. He was there to test that car.
And he's only 20, I think, at this point.
Yeah, early. Yeah, he's, you know, it's 2006. And
he was that intense.
That intense. So we're out practicing, and he's slow, you know, by his means, you know. And he's like, oh, it's just, we're missing something. We're missing something. So he asked, do they got any, they run street stocks here? Do they got, I said, yeah, they do. So we go in the pits. He said, let's find an old bumper. So we go find an old bumper. And so he comes out, we come back in the infield, and he says, all right, give me a hacksaw. So we give him a hacksaw, and he's cutting a piece of metal off this old bumper. And he engineers this thing to go on the right rear shock. So he said, all right, put this on here and do this and that. And he goes out, picks up like four tents.
From a street stock.
From a street stock bumper, puts a bracket on to extend the shock on the right rear.
Wow.
Picks up like four tents. Like,
that's some Jedi.
Yeah. Made a few more changes and stuff. And he's like, yeah, obviously that ain't going to last 250 laps, but you know what I need now. Design and engineer something like that. And, mm-hmm. So yeah. Came back that day. Should have won the race. Blew up with 100 to go.
Yeah.
But the guy works. The guy is there to race, And it's funny, you talk about appearance money. So he gets crashed out in the first lap of the heat. I'm like, oh, here we go. So we go to the Concy, starting like 19th in the Concy. So we're walking down to the lineup. And I said, obviously you got a provisional, Kyle. You don't got to do anything stupid here. And he said, let me tell you something. If I need a provisional to get in this race, I'm going home. Bill Ryan can keep his money. So he takes off, and I'm sitting up in one of the booths. And I'm watching him. He's going, and he's going through the field. And there's Kelly Moore's in the race. And there's some top-notch guys in the Concy, right?
Yep.
With four to go, he takes the lead in the Concy. I'll never forget. He comes off four with his hand out the window waving to the crowd. And everybody in the stands is either giving him the finger or clapping. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like.
That's some Ralph Mason stuff.
Yeah. He is there to put on a show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he put on a show.
Do you guys stay in contact at all throughout the years?
I don't. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm going to Martinsville, by the time this is heard. And mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool, though. So, I'd see him at the Derby and stuff. And Debbie loves to tell this story. We were down there a couple years ago when he won his last Snowball Derby. And I was still at the TV show at the time. And so he wouldn't do any interviews until they clear tech, because we all know what is down there.
Yeah,
you know?
Boy.
So Dillner was kind of running everything. And he's like, we're getting all ready. And they're pretty close to this getting ready to be done. So they're talking to Kyle and they're like, all right, it looks like everything's going to be good. And, how do you want to do it? What do you want to do? We got a lot of people here. And Kyle says, he's all right, we'll get tech. He says, I want to do Perry first. Like, that's what he says. Like he remembered my name from, you know what I mean? So
and that's, 12, 13 years after the fact.
Yeah, before we even started the interview, Debbie's got, she's taking a couple pictures. He's asking how the girls are and how's life been and how you doing? And
that's
I mean? And I'd seen him at the 250 when he'd come up there with his late model, Mm-hmm. So we had seen him and stuff. So, I mean? So, he obviously maintains contact with Seth and, he follows the racing up in the Northeast and that. So, he's a down-to-earth, he's a racer.
Yeah.
You can't say anything more than the
fact that's probably why he's so pissed off these days in Cup, it seems. I mean, maybe this year's a little different, but towards the end of his Gibbs run, it seemed like he took a job and was excited about it for what it was when he took the job, but the job isn't what it was, what he signed up for. The game has changed.
Oh, yeah.
I know he's such an old-school racer, but now he is old-school because he's of a certain age.
Yep.
One of the things I remember about that 2006 Oxford 250 is that you had set up Mainly Motorsports in the pit area, and you were doing a show from that. By that time, it was something that you had taken over. I mean, let's rewind a little bit and talk, recap the racing career, right? So you have a double-decker race hauler. You have these, Oxford 250, you're a winning car owner. The idea is that you're on a trajectory of making a lot of money in racing and making some fairly wise decisions, and then you buy a TV show. You get into broadcasting. How do you even end up with Mainly Motorsports TV?
So we end up in 2006, the economy's tanking. Scott Poulin decides he's going to get married for the second time. Hmm. Well, you can't own a race team like that with an economy that's tanking and try to go and impress a woman with buying her pools and cars and houses and all that. There ain't enough money to go around. And something had to go. So it was the race team. And he really wasn't into the racing like I was.
Right.
So it made sense to disband the race team, so to speak. So
yeah, I was going
to
ask you how SP2 kind of dissolved.
It dissolved. Yeah. So we sold everything off. You know, I got a car. I sold off my car to Rick Ranstrom. That propelled Derek Ranstrom.
I was going to say, is that the one that Derek ended up driving?
Paul Watts bought, I think, a car and bought most of the stuff. Other people, Adam Bates bought a car that
won a race at Beach Ridge.
Won a bunch of races. Yeah. John Fleming. So, I mean, stuff went. It went. I mean, it was all good stuff. You know what I mean? It went.
So you didn't sell the race team whole. You piecemealed it.
It piecemealed it. Yeah. You know, so...
So you're like, what's next?
I was disappointed because, you know, Scott spent the majority of the money, but I put the time and effort and built it. You know, I put all the pieces in place. So I wasn't mad. I was disappointed.
Yeah,
you know?
But you had the personal investment in it.
Yeah. So we're good. So I just race fan. So in 2000, I guess it was... In that year of 2006, we were running north and south. The past north, the south had started. So we were doing, and we were spending some serious money every weekend traveling, you know. And that was the year that John Crawford was doing mainly motorsports and almost died up at Unity when the car ended up on him. So when that happened, they were still trying to do the show. He was in the hospital in a coma. Marco was the co-host. And so he took over the host seat, and they asked Marco just to, you know, get a guy to come in and help you. Just get in here and talk and just do it. Do something. Yeah. You know, keep the show going. Keep the advertisers happy. Keep it going.
Because it's a pretty, even though I think people see it as a cable access show, it wasn't a money printing machine, but, I mean, there were a lot of...
Crawford did well. So Marco calls me. One week, he said, hey, listen, can you come down and help me? You know, I'd known him. He says, can you come? And, you know, you've been on here as a guest when I had Mike Rowe. And he says, just, you know, kind of help out. I says, yeah, I'll come help you out. And, you know, so I go down and I do it with him. It was fun. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool.
You get to be the clown.
Yeah, it's
right?
pretty cool. Entertainer. Marco, and I'm sitting like, you're the host, I'm the co-host, you know. So I ain't got a worry in the world. The next week. He calls me again. He goes, I forgot to line somebody up, you know. You know, they wanted me to get somebody different every week. And he goes, can you get away again? I go, yeah, because I was working for Poulin at the time. And I had a pretty flexible job, you know.
Yeah, what were you doing?
Running the gravel pit.
Okay.
You know, so I'm like, yeah, I can come up again. And, you know, so I go up again. So the people running Time Warner... or running the station and the show, we get all done, and they come out, and they said, hey, listen, I know the plans were to have different co-hosts come in each week and that, but you two have really got a connection. You know, like, you're picking up when Marco's hitting that dead spot, you're feeding off it. You see it coming, and you're ready to pick up, and, you know, and can you stay with it until John comes back? So
there you go.
I said, yeah, no, I appreciate it, and... So I did. So I stayed with it, and me and Marco, and we had a good time, you know. And so it was probably 3 or 4 months before John came back. So I, the whole summer, you know, doing stuff and, you know, talking about highlights and doing stuff. And I was going to races and talking about things. And so it was pretty cool. So then John comes back, and I kind of lose touch with it. You know, I watched it, but I just was never a John Crawford fan, you know. You know, even though John helped me over the years in selling some advertising and stuff, but I just, his product was just like the oversell, under deliver, the over the top, you know, oh my, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm like, I just never bought into that, you know? So I just, so then I get a call one day from, you know, I don't even recognize the number. It's a guy by the name of Jim Walker. I said, hello. And he said, hey, Steve, yeah, Jim Walker, Time Warner Cable. I said, oh, how you doing, Jim? He said, hey, I got something to run by you. I said, what's that? He goes, what do you think about buying mainly motorsports? I said, never really thought about it, but what are you talking about?
Right.
He said, well, Doug White's going to buy Wiscasset, and he wants John to come to work for him. So I'm just giving you a little insight that John is going to try to sell mainly motorsports, and you're at the top of the list.
what does buying a TV show entail? Why couldn't you just start your own TV show?
Well, you could.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You could. But I guess you would, you know, if somebody else had bought it,
right,
they're probably not going to start a TV show that
But mirrors. What's the value in it?
So the value at the time was, mm-hmm. once again, oversell. I got oversold and underdelivered. I bought a bag of goods, mm-hmm. because you're buying the connections, you're buying the contacts, you're buying the, you know, here, this is our contacts, this is our contracts, this okay. is our, you know what I mean?
You're so buying the floor plan.
You're buying the, you know.
Okay.
So
the infrastructure.
The problem with when I bought mainly motorsports was, you know, BRP, Bombardier Recreational Products, had spent $16,000 with John Crawford, paid all the money up front, and still had 9 months of advertising coming to them. So I'm not liable. I didn't have to.
Right.
But in good faith, honor the 9 months of advertising and hoping that after.
So they didn't prorate any of, he didn't prorate no. any of that advertising.
No, he was a good salesman.
Okay.
You know? So he got all the money, and then I.
Could you take him to court on this?
I mean, what it could have showed is probably the dumbest decision. Well, there's one that'll mirror it.
Okay. It's on the Rushmore.
Yeah. Dumbest decisions I ever did was buy mainly motorsports. Like you said, just fold it up. Let me start my own.
Okay.
Okay. But, it, you know, I'm going to be on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about an ego trip, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm going to be on TV. Like, so, yeah, yeah. Where do I sign up? You know what I mean?
They got you.
You got me. So I buy it. I got all these contacts. I call all of them, right? Hey, I call Rick Sally from BRP. I call this one from the battery place. I call this one, And
but these are people who have already paid.
Yeah.
And you're not seeing a penny of their money, of their advertising money, of their investment in your program now.
Nope. But I'm doing what I think is the honorable thing.
Right.
Of like letting them know that I've bought this program from him. You've already paid, but what are your expectations? What can we do? Because I want to, if I can do them right.
They're going to re-up with you.
You know, my hopes are.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's at the time where the economy
is starting to crash.
You know, and if they don't, if they think they were sold a bag of goods and even what I'm doing isn't worth the bag of goods they were sold,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, like I said, dumbest thing, you know, I did. But some of the, you know, one of the things that I will, the friendship, because when I picked the phone up and I called VIP Tour and Charter Bus Company and asked to speak to Ray Penfold,
mm-hmm.
and told him who I was, you can set up a meeting. And I go in and I set up a meeting. And so I sit up with Ray, and that's how I met Ray Penfold. And to think that me in my 40s would become friends with
right.
Ray Penfold.
What was your first impression of him?
He was like, just sit there and listen to him. Right. And I'll never forget. So I'm sitting there and go in and see him and we're talking and he's telling me about all his history. And I'd known Billy, you know. And so I said, oh, you know, got your family here. And I said, oh, is that your granddaughter out there?
Hmm.
Where? Well, it was his daughter, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's old, so I'm not thinking, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, so you can imagine how he goes off on me about, what do you think? I'm too old. And I'm like, whoa, buddy. Yeah. So just, you know what I mean? So, yeah, the money it cost me that, but the friendship because of Ray. So, you know, the meeting Ray, and then, you know, things down the road that when Ray, they built him a mud truck, you know, 80-something years old, going to go in a big mud run, right? And he asked me to be his co-pilot in his first run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So what's that worth, Andy? I mean,
well,
it ain't worth anything. You know what I mean?
Well, no, it is. It comes back to an earlier conversation where you're like, well, I have a few plaques. But what you're doing is providing the memories and the, you know, the mental sweat equity that you've, you know, acquired over the years. And that pays in spades. You know, like your ride with Ray Penfold. Financially, though, how much money did you lose on Mainly Motorsports?
Oh, my God. So you know, it's costing me in the beginning because you're going up to, you know, you're paying the editor, you're paying airtime, you're paying studio time. So mm-hmm. an average show is $700 to $1,000 a week. So.
Yeah. And and you got free advertising. So 90% of your advertising is comped based on a previous agreement.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I get a check from somebody, you know, and, you know, send it all up to them. And it isn't even putting a dent. So it's so funny because I'll never forget. My first real advertiser to sign on board was Lee Mortensen.
Oh.
We go to breakfast, and he wants to see my packages. So mm-hmm. I got a $300 package, and I got a $750 package. And, that's not – what else you got? So I said, well, we got this. I leave breakfast with a $5,000 package. You'd have thought I thought I hit the lottery, you know? Yeah. But the costs were astronomical. So I'll never forget. So I've got commitments, you know, right. So I've got people like him that have paid me. So I got a few people that have paid me, but I'm digging a hole. So I owe Time Warner like $24,000, and they're nice enough to keep me going. And then,
well, the ratings were really good.
And then when they start screeching, mm-hmm. I bring them something. I'm like, oh, you gotta bear with me. You gotta bear mm-hmm. with me. The saving grace of mainly motorsports was a guy by the name of Dave Stewart. He had reached out to me a couple times just in an email and just said, hey, if you ever need any help, you never need anything, I'm just a self-taught guy. So they called me up and they said, listen, I can't do it anymore. Steve, I'm getting pressure. Like you owe us so much. I'm afraid of failure. And now when people tune in and it's not on, now they're going to start calling. They're going to start texting. How do you tell people that I can't do it anymore? I can't afford it because I'm doing it out of my pocket and I don't have the money. You don't want to tell people that you fail, you mm-hmm. know? So I reach out to Dave. Don't know him. Never met him. We go have a meeting. The first show that we do together is a Mother's Day thing with Save Speed for the Track.
Yeah.
With Kendra. And it was about a Mother's Day tribute and all that.
And Kendra lost her son in the car accident.
Yep. So it was our first one we'd ever done together, you know, and it wasn't about racing. It was about that. Mm-hmm. If it's not for Dave Stewart stepping up and doing the show with me and me taking the stuff and us doing it like we're doing like a podcast today, mm-hmm. And cutting the cost. So now all I'm doing is buying airtime. He's literally, it's a lot more work on me instead of driving up on Wednesdays and taping a show and they're putting it together. And, you know, now I'm driving to his, I'm taping a show on Sunday, driving to his house. You know, I'm doing a lot of the editing or sending him stuff.
Right.
But the cost have gone way down. If it's not for him, mainly motorsports never goes beyond probably 200 episodes.
I remember when he came on board, just as a viewer, the production value went through the roof. You know, it definitely was something that was a different level than that you had had before. So, you know, it's interesting when you watch a show and you have a thought of like, oh, boy, they look like they're really, you know, just putting this together, or I think it's easy to say, well, the effort isn't there. They're just collecting the money. But in retrospect now, you can say, well, there was no money. They were barely hanging on. And if it wasn't for this guy's good deed, the show wouldn't have gone on. And there are people whose racing careers would have never seen the light of day, specifically Austin Terrio, with the race at Spud Speedway a couple of years later. Can you tell us about mainly motorsports night up at Spud Speedway and the birth of Austin Terrio? Well, not the birth of it, but like the coming out party.
It was so funny because Mike Twist mm-hmm. will always say, I founded Austin Terrio. Mm-hmm. Well, Austin Terrio was going to be found, you know, but it was ironic.
But was he though?
Yeah, because the next week he went to Oxford. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but with the momentum.
Yeah, with momentum and with people probably paying attention to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So this is, you know, and like I said, I don't look for credit. I don't ask for the credit.
Let's just cut the shit on that one. Just tell me about that night.
So we go to Spud Speedway, and Troy Haney takes it over.
Mm-hmm.
He reaches out. He says, listen, we invite you to be our master of ceremonies. We're opening up. We're putting on a big late model race. We'd like you to come up and be the master of ceremonies, you know. Mm-hmm. Bring your family. Bring, you know, anybody you want to bring. And I said, oh, I'd love to, you know. So at the time, Amanda was my co-host at the show.
Mm-hmm.
And Leanne and Andrea, we went up. Alicia was racing go-karts. So we go up. Had a great time. We're up at Spud Speedway. So it's like, you know, there ain't a lot of high-powered race teams up there. So mm-hmm. if there are a handful of them, you kind of pay attention to them. Well, this one kid catches your eye. You know, they got a nice little setup. They're very well put together. And, you know, everybody's, they're not the redneck look of what you're accustomed or what you think you're going to see.
How old is Austin at this point?
I think he's 16.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of paying attention to him. I do a little interview with him early in the day and very well spoken. So he goes out and wins the race. I am so impressed of his interview of how he's being conducting. And he's, when he's talking about beating Dave Sinclair and Ricky Morse, he's calling him Mr. Sinclair and Mr. Morse,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'm like, this is the stuff you can't, this is instilled. This, you don't teach this, you know? So on my show that week, I'm talking about it. I've shown his interview. I'm showing highlights of the race. And I'm telling people, you got to pay attention to this kid. This kid is the real deal. He's got all, not only the on-track presence of how to maneuver and handle a race car, but the off-track stuff that you can't teach, that the stuff that sponsors want, the stuff that you want to. And the next week he goes to Oxford and runs an ACT race. And, you know, ACT bringing
top three,
35.
I think.
Well, no, it was mid-pack. He was like 17th or 18th.
Okay, yeah, different race
but,
then. No.
But in the rundown of who he beat, Eddie McDonald was two or three cars behind him. A couple other, so recognizable names he beat, you know, not because they dropped out, he beat.
Hmm.
And I had numerous people call me up and say, oh my God, you're right, this kid is a real deal.
Well, I learned about him on your show. I wasn't at the Spud Speedway event, but without mainly motorsports coverage and the fact that a lot of us race fans, you know, tuned in every single week to watch that program and to give him the platform that you gave him, I think a kid from Spud Speedway comes in and runs 17th in an ACT race, no one blinks an eye. But had that been, without you building it up on the TV show, without him winning that race and having that platform, and I wouldn't say the expectation, but just the second act of what he had done, no pun intended, the second act, you know, consecutive weeks to run like that. You know, I give you and that whole, you know, mainly motorsports machine credit for putting Austin Terrio on the map. Now, everything that he did as a result of being on the map, I mean, he was given the ball. You gave him the ball, and he ran it for a touchdown. You know, he did the work there. But I think without you guys, it would have been a lot harder for him to have the platform that he did.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, the show aspect, we just tried to do those things, opportunities, you know, whether it was kids, whether it was tracks, mm-hmm. whether it was anything. And you, now I've been to Canada, you know, Florida, I mean, the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be hard pressed to find an episode of the 700 episodes or the 600 that I taped,
mm-hmm.
or any of my social media or anything. You'd be hard pressed to find any negative comments that I said on a show. I might say something about a racer that did something wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not lying.
Right. Okay? You might have a Peter Griffin grind my gear segment.
You know, but you won't see me call a track out,
right.
A promoter out.
And you've had every opportunity to.
Yeah. And because that's doing no good.
Right.
Because I could go to any track or any facility, you know, and find something wrong because I've been to so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it does me no good because I could, when me and Debbie leave LST Motorsports Park and drive home, what do you think our talk is about? How our day could have gone better. How this race, we should have done this different.
Yeah.
How that's how you become better as a promoter or as a business owner or anything, is you got to critique yourself.
Well, let's talk about Debbie a little bit. You guys seem to have quite the partnership. It seems like you guys are joined at the hip, and no matter what the heck you're doing, whatever crazy idea you have, because there are quite a few, she's right there for you. What does she mean to you in not only a romantic partner sense, but business partner sense? Because it seems like you guys are always doing stuff.
Everything. We talk about, mainly motorsports. Dumbest mm-hmm. thing I've ever done in racing.
She told you that.
No, I told my mom. But
yeah.
The friendships that has done for me,
mm-hmm.
it brought Debbie Doerr.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know Debbie Doerr if it's not for mainly motorsports. I can have a tendency to be a shit show. But when I say that, in a good way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the show you want to be.
You're a buckshot, dude. You are everywhere.
It's the show you want to be a part of.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, she stabilizes that, I mean, we'd go to the Augusta show and, how'd you do? I don't know. Did you make money? I guess. You know what I mean?
I had fun.
We had fun.
Yeah.
There's money. I got a pile of money.
Go count it.
Yep.
Yeah.
She's the attention to detail. She is the organized attention to detail. That, the go-kart track, she came in kicking and screaming. When I called her and said, this is what I want to do, she weren't happy.
Mm.
But she did it. And she is there every week. And, the reason that the organization, I'm organized chaos. We joke and laugh about a lot of things, but she is the one, she's like the one thing that I've always wanted is, you can't stop me. You know what I mean? I'm going. So you can't stop me. And she knows that. Okay. But I will tell you when I turn around, she's right there.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Well, she can keep an eye on you.
Well, but you know what I mean? So, so it's one thing if, okay, I know I can't stop him.
But how do I harness him?
But I'm going with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's one thing if I turn around and she's nowhere to be found because, so what? Let him go.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And my friends have embraced her. And I have a big world of friends, and they all, and the joke is, and we joke about it. They'll all say, what are you? Because I'm
tough.
I'm selfish. I'm out there. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. And, it's probably, I don't want to say a little cruel at times, but everybody knows that Steve Perry's going to do what Steve Perry's going to do. And at the end of the day, it is what it is.
And Steve, true to form, did not hold back in stage number two. And yes, we do complete the trilogy next time out. That infamous pit meeting.
That pit meeting.
Yeah.
He walks by the golf cart, comes to the other side. He's got his little papers with him or whatever. He says, hey, just so before you hear it from anybody else, he says, I called you out at my driver's meeting of what I think about you and your show. Nothing personal, but I think your show's a joke. He says, all you do is talk about yourself. You don't do anything for the sport. You don't talk about any drivers. You don't have drivers on your show. Like, literally, I was dumbfounded.
Yeah, it's a driver's meeting.
It took me a few seconds because when he started to come talk to me, I thought he was going to apologize to me for not getting back to me because I had reached out to him a week or so earlier.
Steve Perry, stage three on Open Trailer Podcast. I'm Andy Austin. Thank you again for the support. Get at you next time.